Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
As we become more open to the experiences of others, both as individuals and I think society as a whole, we're confronted with our own behavior. And if that behavior is still happening, it can be addressed in the here and now. One of my favorite quotes is from Maya Angelou. She said, "When we know better, we do better." But this begs the question, how do we handle our past thoughtless or hurtful actions before we knew it was a problem? Some people choose denial. I never owned slaves, or I've never catcalled a woman. And while those may be true statements, they don't really address the problem of what was once socially accepted that is now increasingly frowned upon. So, should there simply be a statute of limitations like in the law? Or would something more along the lines of South Africa's truth and reconciliation process be more appropriate? And by the way, what does this have to do with marriage and relationships anyway? So the Me Too movement has made all of this relevant. It stirred up plenty of feelings in both men and women. And to talk about how to move forward in a more responsive and I think less reactive way, I'm joined by Justin Leoy. He's a licensed clinical social worker who specializes in men's issues and counseling. So Justin, thank you so much for coming in and talking about what I think is both important and timely.
Thanks so much for having me, Leslie. It's great to be here.
So you wrote a piece for the Good Men Project, which my listeners will know I'm getting all you guys on here as often as I can, called Reflections on Straight Male Behavior. And you talk about how men are reacting to the Me Too movement. So what are some of the behaviors you're seeing?
Well, it certainly varies, and people are coming at this from as they reflect themselves on their past and what they're hearing and what they're hearing from others. And a lot of stuff has been getting stirred up, and I like what you said before in terms of moving forward in a less reactive but more responsive way, because I think there's a tendency to react, and often that's where our defenses are. You know,
right, the knee-jerk reaction, I didn't do it.
Exactly.
It's not me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so those, you know, by the time someone decides to sign up for therapy to look into some issues and relationship issues, they might not be in the reactive place, but it'll come up soon. But they've been thinking about this for a little bit. There could be some polar opposite ways that people are responding, and some are really digging their heels in, saying this is nuts. This is not happening. This certainly isn't me, and this is all going so far, where it's like witch hunt come up. And there are other people who are showing up, feeling so ashamed and guilty and afraid to move forward at all in relationships. I had someone who recently said that they'd been, and this was horrible, but they said they'd been Me Too'd, and that's why they're not having sex anymore. And it was a great opportunity to talk about what exactly that meant and how they were taking this in, this whole situation. So there's the not me response. There's the, but that was in a different time, and now this is a different time, and so they're not even going to reflect on the past. They just want to move forward. One of the people, especially when we're hearing about a celebrity or something, we don't have all the facts. We don't have this side. We don't have that side and that. And people want to.
Or it happened so long ago. Why are we bringing it up now?
Yeah, yeah. Or you know, it's he said, she said. Especially if we're dealing with a straight couple. There's a lot of people getting accused of being the sex police. Instead of, this is going to move away from the fun, flirtatious game and that women are just a part of this as men and women really want this. I hear that a lot. Like, women really want this, as if there's one woman that wants all women want the same thing.
You mean we don't?
They have.
I'm shocked.
From what I've heard. I mean, I work mostly with men, so you can tell me. But yes, it is true. women and men and straight women and straight, and everybody wants something different. There's not one way. There's not one uber way of doing this.
Right. Well, and that's also, I think, one of the challenges is because, as I said before, people like easy answers. They like, yes, this is okay, or no, this isn't. Good, bad, right, wrong, none of this gray stuff of, oh, my gosh, let me figure out who the person is that I'm dealing with.
Wouldn't the world be simpler if everything could be broke down to that way?
Well, I think most people would really like it to be that way, and I really think that's why it creates some issues. And one of the reasons why I really wanted to talk about this is because Esther Perel, I don't know if you know who she is, but she's a
she's
a very well-known therapist who has, you know, an amazing take on male-female relationships. And I'm paraphrasing her because I don't have the quote right in front of me, but she talks about, you know, that women can't really move forward if we don't bring men along. Basically saying, we need both. We need both genders, and I would argue all people, to be willing to talk about this stuff. And not in, and I think this is where, and maybe you see this with some of your clients, where not in a blaming bad, you know, way, you're a man, ergo you're bad, or you're a woman, ergo you're good, but in a more complete, how do we talk about these really tough topics?
Yeah, it's you're maybe familiar with, I think it's the APA, the American Psychological Association, just came out with this new new ways of working, I forgot the title of it, but ways, best practices in working with men and boys, and it's gotten a, you know, like we were talking a little before about the Gillette commercial, it's gotten this, these two-sided things, like some people are like, oh, I'm glad we're talking about this more, this is important, and there's the other side, which is like, oh, you're trying to blame men, you're blaming masculinity, you're blaming this, and they're, it's like you're not listening to the whole situation, because if we just talk about men or masculinity or toxic masculinity, we're losing what we're really wanted to make the change in, which is in the patriarchy, which is a system that all of us are bound up in, we've grown up in, we're swimming in, and we all have different roles that we've been playing in it, and it's, that whole thing is toxic because it you know, you brought up Esther Perel, and we've talked before about Terrence Real, who talks about how we get, you know, boys and girls get, I forget exactly the words they use, but kind of get halved somewhere around 10, 11, right before puberty comes in, where, you know, boys are allowed to be strong and be leaders and push down the ceilings, where girls are expected to, oh, you can relate, you can have your... You can have more feelings, but like, don't be too pushy, don't be too bossy. So neither of us, from early on, are taught to not be our full selves, which is what the patriarchy then moves us towards. It's this having thing again that we keep either moving towards or struggling with, and we all get lost in it because none of us, no one person fits so well in one side or the other. Cause
well, because
talking about binaries, we're done.
Because like. Like anything else, we're all of it. I mean, you know, it's and that, I think, is where, I mean, again, please give me the easy answers. And it's critically important for all of us to be whole, and I think that that's, you know, if we want to go back, and I'm old enough, dating myself, to actually remember the woman's movement back in the 70s. I was a child, but I was still alive. Where, you know, some of that has broken down and now it's women can have it all. It's like, well, yes and no, but, you know, it's now we're supposed to go out, and, you know, the old, oh gosh, what was it, the perfume commercial, which is, you know, bring home the bacon, fry it up in a pan and never let you forget you're a man.
Oh, wow.
Which is crazy. Oh, yeah. That was a, I can't remember what perfume commercial that was. But it was, you know, but then it's this idea that, you know, we've kind of been working for years on breaking down the stereotypical women's roles. Of course, we're still not there yet. And I think this is what Esther means when we have to say we have to bring men along, because in breaking down the stereotypical women's roles, we're breaking down the stereotypical male roles, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it's leaving us all lost. So yeah. I want to go back to something that you talked about in the article about that you suggest, and this is kind of a stereotypical male thing. It's not true in all for all men or in all cases. But you suggest that instead of jumping in to fix it, that men should spend some time reflecting. And so what's the benefit of this, and would it actually look like?
Sure, sure. One more thing just on the idea of women need to bring men along in this movement is the idea that men think, you know, there's a load of privilege that comes with being male in our society. And men have not taken enough time to realize how hurt we are by all of this, by holding on to this, how much it is eating away at us, how much it's killing us in many ways. Men are more likely, I think it's 4 times more likely to commit suicide than women.
Yes, and you guys generally tend to die earlier from stress and other things. Yes.
So there's a big part, and this will go towards answering the next question, is the idea of we need to acknowledge that it is killing us, that this idea of, like, clinging to these stereotypes, like we need to fix everything, is hurting our relationships, and it's hurting physically. It's literally killing us in some ways. So I think we see, and so the stereotype of the man is going to fix everything, give me the problem, I'll figure it out, I'll do that, I'll take care of it, I'll take care of you. And that is not what is needed so much right now. So there is a sense of we need to, you know, more and more we're saying we need to listen to women, listen to survivors, listen to people who are talking to us about this. And that means that, number one, we need to be quiet. That means we are not being asked to jump in and fix this. We are asked to listen to it, to believe it, and then to sit with what that means for us, to reflect on how, even if we did not do some of the horrific things that we're hearing about, whether it's celebrities or not celebrities, just horrific things that we hear about that are part of rape culture, what have we been doing in small ways? And again, I'm not even asking us to put blame on ourselves and feel shame about it. What I'm asking us is to reflect on how we grew up. What stereotypes did we take in? You know, did you grow up with, like, after a holiday dinner, the men went inside and sat down and watched TV while all the women cleaned?
Right, the kids are cleaning, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so is that rape culture? No, but it is starting out this idea that there are roles and there are things and there are servers and served, and anyone who transgresses any of that gets shamed and gets called back in. If the woman was to sit down or if the man was to go in and start wiping dishes, that it would be noticed. It would be talked about. It would be called out, and it might be shamed in some way. The idea is that, and then reflect on how you are on dates, how you are with relationships, how you are in the workplace with how you interact, how you might respond to a female candidate or a male candidate if you're someone who's interviewing people, or if you are a worker, and how you might interact differently during regular work days or lunch times or whatever it is. To just start thinking about what you have never thought about before. Bring this into consciousness. And it will be, it could become paralyzing, because then you're thinking of everything that you do, and we can acknowledge that. We're not going to stay stuck there, but we need to spend some time reflecting on what little parts we have played in this.
And I do think it's really important, and you mentioned this, and I don't think it can be stressed enough, that this isn't about a blame, shame game. Mm-hmm. This is really about becoming, like you said, more aware. And some of that is giving ourselves grace for not knowing, but requiring ourselves to actually learn. Because whether it's male, female, or across ethnicities or races or whatever, we have no idea what it's like to be in the skin of that other person. We only know what it's like to be in our own skin, and sometimes we're not even clear about that. But, you know, it's the openness to, just because somebody has a different view of life doesn't make ours wrong, theirs right. It just means we have a difference. And that, I mean, that's one of the things that I harp on all the time on this show, is that the biggest challenge to marriage is that we don't look at the world the same way. We haven't experienced it the same way. And being willing to see that no two people, I don't care who they are, even if they grew up in the same family. Well, I argue that we don't ever actually grow up in the same family, because, you know, my sibling was always there before I was. And so this idea that, you know, and again, it's also about not being paralyzed, because we do sort of have to function a little bit on assumption and kind of automatic behaviors. It's like, when I get on the road, I don't want to have to constantly assume that there's going to be some car coming at me, as opposed to going in the direction of traffic. But sometimes we have to be willing to take a look at those assumptions, right?
We do, and we have to be open to the, for lack of a better term, bad feelings that may arise.
I don't want to feel bad.
Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons we get so busy. We want to get rid of that feeling. So we're going to fix it. I'll atone. I'll do this thing, and then I'm done. My slate is wiped clean. And part of this goes into, we've mentioned shame a couple of times, and in my work with my clients, we talk a lot, often pretty early on, about the difference between shame and guilt, and how shame can be so just all-encompassing. I am, at core, a bad person, and that's what shame does to us, and I'm irredeemable, and it's horrifying, it's horrible.
Right.
Guilt, though, on the other hand, guilt can certainly become shame. Guilt can be a great way of letting us know that we've transgressed. We've done something that we don't feel so great about, and we want to make a change for the next time. So it doesn't say that we are at core a bad person. It means, like, we made a bad choice. It may have hurt someone.
We made a mistake.
But I can move forward.
I can learn and do it differently.
Yeah, so it's not about letting yourself off the hook. It doesn't mean, okay, yes, you can reflect now, and you've done all those things, and now, you know, forget it, move forward, just don't do it again. It's a little more than that. It's sitting with the sense that I might have to just grapple with the fact that I did something that hurt someone who I might never, ever see again. I don't know what she might feel. I don't know if she remembers it or she doesn't, but I'm gonna live with that without having to change it or something, or get forgiveness for me, you know, for my benefit, while at the same time moving forward to do things differently again. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah.
This is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on WebTalkRadio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking with clinical social worker Justin Leoy about how men can step up in light of the Me Too movement. And again, one thing I want to make crystal clear is that this is not about blame or shame. It's about learning to do better. Because in reality, the same limiting masculine behaviors that are fueling this movement have counterparts in limiting feminine behaviors as well. And so what we're talking about today is the goal needing to be about moving past the rigidity so that all people, men and women, can embrace their whole selves. So if this is something you want, I invite you to learn more about the Hero Husband Project. It's a new project that I've started, and you can find out more about it at www.theherohusbandproject.com. No spaces, no dashes, no nothing, because I think it's really important that we bring everybody into the discussion. And so, Justin, after men have taken the time to reflect, you suggest that they then, we were talking about it, sit with it. And so you're talking a little bit about sitting with it. And what makes this such a challenge?
Well, because it doesn't feel good, like we said before. you want to, I mean, it's pretty basic. This doesn't feel good. I want to change it. I want to feel better. Part of therapy is getting access to all of your feelings, even the ones that some people call negative. People work, we I mean, there's the idea that men are really only allowed the feeling of anger, and maybe happy sometimes, but like anger is the catch-all for all the more uh-huh. vulnerable things. The fear, the sadness, the shame, the guilt, all of that can come out in anger. And that could be very active anger. It could be very like, oh, I'm doing this thing. I'm not feeling that. And then it's anger in the moment can feel great, especially if I get to slam something or do something that makes me feel more powerful. That can be terrific in the moment. Of course, it could lead to more shame, depending, especially right. if I'm destructive in some way or hurt someone in
mm-hmm.
some way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's we're not taught to sit with uncomfortable feelings. I mean, early on, I mean, I've seen people with babies say, "Stop crying! Like, I need to stop you from crying." Like, I get it. You don't want the baby to be crying for hours. So, like, the baby is angry. The baby's sad. The
right.
toddler, the 10-year-old, the 15-year-old who hurt themselves on the field or fell down or something. You got to hold that in. Don't cry. We got to get right back
right.
out there. How about freaking cry?
Well, yeah, you just made yeah. me flash back to something that my father used to say about that if I didn't stop crying, he'd give me something good to cry about. And
yeah,
like, okay,
yeah.
if I'm crying, I think I have a reason. But again, one of the things I swore I would never say to my children, and so far they're both now adults, and I've never said it to either one of them. But I have channeled my parents in other ways, but never that way. It's really hard because those difficult emotions, we don't want people to feel those things. I don't want my child to be unhappy. I don't want my husband to be sad. I don't want somebody to be hurt. So we try to make it all better, and what we're doing, I think, is really hog-tying, the people in our lives in not letting them be who they are, be in the moment of what they're feeling, unless, of course, it's acceptable times, like when somebody has died, or, it's like, okay,
even then,
it's acceptable to be sad. But even then,
I've been at funerals where I've heard a man say, I'm sweating, I'm not crying, to his kids.
Oh, wow.
He wouldn't know
yeah.
that he was crying. Like, it's even sometimes not allowed then. We work really hard to avoid, and sometimes the energy we put into avoiding difficult feelings, difficult topics, vulnerabilities could so be better spent. I mean, having the sadness, having the fear, expressing it, and eventually moving on, as opposed to all the work that goes into not showing that. It's exhausting. It's exhausting watching people do it. I mean, as you're a therapist as well, you're sitting across from someone who is just working
uh-huh.
so hard to not have the feeling you just say, oh, I just want you to let it go, not because I want to be a good therapist, just because, like, it looks, you're struggling so much, you don't have to.
Well, that's why I always tell the people in my office, it's like, stop apologizing for crying. It's like, it's okay to cry. Of all places, it's okay to cry in here. Don't apologize for being upset or whatever. It's those are natural feelings. And, yes, there are inappropriate times to show them, I would argue, but not universally,
mm-hmm.
And I think that again, we're back into that gray area. We're back into the, how do you know? How do you decide? So that brings me to another question. Is there ever a time for a man to, stop sitting with it and actually take action?
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. The problem is so many of us just skip that step and jump to the jump to the end. And which is when we're talking about, what did you say before, the reacting instead of the responding. Like this, that's the response.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a
mm-hmm.
lot of this is sit with it and, talk to people you care and love and are going to be honest with you. Talk to your friends about what's come up, people that you trust. As you're reassessing these things, sit with what does this mean? What is this? I'm feeling guilty. I'm feeling shame. I'm feeling this. And then you know, and if someone is talking to us about that, don't be so quick to jump in and save them, but like, but hear them and, mm-hmm. and give your honest opinion about that. And you certainly will take action moving forward in what you do and how you do it. Maybe there will be someone that you feel you need to make amends to, but you want to make sure you're doing it for their benefit and not for yours. And that's hard to know. Every situation is going to be a little mm-hmm. different. So you're going to want to, you know, sit with the people that you really trust and be like, does it make sense to do this? Or uh-huh. is this really about me feeling so guilty and I need their forgiveness in order to move on? I mean, so much of this is also, the action is also not, you know, I'm a big believer in organizing and that we're all going to, if we're going to make any change in the world, it's going to be by bonding together in some way in groups. And men need to call in other men. Men need to say to each other that's not, you know, what are you doing? Like, let's reassess what you just mm-hmm. said or how you did that. And that puts us at risk. That it really does. Mm-hmm. If we call out something and we're in a room with a bunch of other people, it could really put us at risk, which says early on, like there was, I forgot what radio show I was listening to, where there was the people talking about how if you're going to start doing this, like locate at least one other person and say, listen, when Joe makes that comment that we know he's going to make, I'm going to say something, but I need you to back me up. So
right,
that
right.
I'm not out there alone.
So
too many people will.
Everybody's going to chop it off. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because too many people will go up to the. Too many men will go up to the woman afterward and be like, "Oh, I heard what he said. That was really horrible." And she'll be like, "Well, why did you say anything? Like, why are you
right.
telling me now? This means nothing." No, we need to be active in the moment and say, "Listen, I'm hearing this, and I'm not sure what this is." Like, you don't have to be. You don't have to do it in a way that's like slamming someone down, but you can.
Well,
call it out and be like, let's also take a pause.
And I think that is a really important point that is, again, you don't, it's not coming in with some kind of harshness or false bravado. I mean, I've always found, and it's the thing that I suggest to my clients, is ask questions. You know, kind of like, I'm curious, what does that mean? You know, where you're actually kind of like forcing somebody to kind of like, oh, or even asking a question about, you know, something like, well, don't you have, you know, a daughter's, or don't you have a girlfriend, or, you know, kind of like, you know, you're talking, or kind of, it is somewhat of a, you're not letting the situation pass, but you're not necessarily being overly confrontational either. And to me, sometimes just that brief moment of somebody having a different thought, it's like, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, I wouldn't like it if somebody did this, you know, to my wife. Oh. Because the cool thing is once we have a thought, we can't unhave them.
Right. Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's important to not just because we have, not just because we happen to know a woman or have a daughter or a wife or a girlfriend or a mother that, now I want to take that. Like, we want to have people do it because it we're all human.
Well, yeah,
some of the ideas, where did that come from? Where did those ideas come? You seem to have very specific ideas about what a woman should do or a man should do.
Where did that come from?
Yeah, which is how it often comes up in sessions where I might want to say, wow, that's the thing that's incredibly sexist you just said, or just get really angry, which is not going to help anyone. But so
no.
It's then kind of exploring, like, yeah, it's an interesting belief. How did that get formed? Let me learn more about your background, your culture, your family, and I can give you some alternatives because that wasn't the case over here, stuff like that.
Well, and that's always, and of course, to do that, I think that the previous step of actually sitting with it, because we have to figure out where we are so that we can respond and not react. Now, I do think that there are times when it is critically important that we do react because somebody's safety may be at stake and we may want to step up. But,
of course, yeah.
You know, but sometimes it's because people will always respond better to not being attacked. And that's, I think, the real key between the difference between reacting and responding, that if somebody says something really harsh and I react to it, chances are I'm not going to present it in a way that can be received.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is all about learning. And it's how in the moment can I be more inquisitive? And because, again, one of my goals for this year, and I think it's just for the rest of my life, is to really pay attention to when I am being judgmental. And it's like, oh, yeah, it's like, oh, that was a judgmental thought. What was that about? Because if I can ask myself those questions, then I'm capable of asking other people those questions in a more productive way. But it is about trying not to come across as being judgmental, and I think that's where, and by the way, just because I'm not being judgmental doesn't mean I think it's okay. Which I don't know if that makes
right.
any sense.
Yeah, but. No, absolutely. Well, you can also come from a place of, especially if you've done that reflecting first, that sense of, oh, I hear what you're saying. I actually used to feel that same way. This is mm-hmm. this is how I might have shifted. This is what I learned, or this is what I figured out. So that you can engage and with them on the same, like, I'm not coming out of nowhere. I'm not judging you because I was just like that. 5 uh-huh. years ago, 10 years ago, or last week, but I learned this. What do you think? And then you're having a discussion. So, you know, you might not
right.
convince them, but you're putting some ideas in their mind that no one, someone else might have just reacted to and called them a horrible person, which, you know, like you said, if you're attacked, you're not really going to hear it, and you're not going to just let it go by. You're going to let them know you're willing to engage in a conversation with them, and they, uh-huh. you know, you're planting a seed.
And I think, and I really do think that's the way through some of the challenges that we're facing in society. I mean, on some level, I look at this as a very exciting time. I
Great.
Realize
yeah.
that for a lot
yeah.
of people it's completely uncomfortable, but mm-hmm. but we're now facing a lot of things that have needed to be faced for a long time, and, you know, it is kind of scary. So where can other people, where can the listeners find out more about your approach, this whole concept of moving through things?
Like me and my uh-huh. work, or are you talking other
yeah.
resources and stuff like that? Well,
no,
I
specifically you and your work.
Yeah, certainly. So I'm like, oh, that's a big thing. Otherwise, I can give lots of a reading list if that's what you want. I can be found online at www.parkslopetherapist.com, and I work in my office is in Brooklyn, but I have an online practice too. So I see people throughout New York State and some other parts of internationally as well, because online lets us do all that. Like, we're able to have this conversation
I know,
right
it's
now.
So cool. Yes, fantastic.
Yeah, and on that site, I write a lot about this stuff, as I do also on the Good Men Project. I have an online course. I work specifically with a lot of new dads as well. My practice focuses on men. It's not exclusively mm-hmm. that, but you know, people are coming for all the reasons that we've talked about. Plus, a lot of people, when they have kids, they decide, wow, you know, I wanna do something different than I have uh-huh. for me, and I have no idea where to start. So I have a course on becoming a new dad that's on there, and this is where all the writings and thoughts that I have about all these things are found too. So parkslopetherapist.com.
Terrific. So we're talking about social movements, and they're scary, and because by definition they're intended to shake up the status quo. And if you're one of the people who's benefited from that status quo, even unintentionally, you may find yourself off balance and uncertain. And by the way, that's human. So how you choose to move forward will determine how your life and your relationships will incorporate the new normal. So I'm inviting you to not be scared of it, or even if you are scared of it, to be willing to ask some questions. And again, not about shame and blame, but about learning. And hopefully you'll keep listening to the show. And until next week, stay loving.